It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Shannon Bream.
I'm Tom Shalhoub.
I'm Maria Bartiromo, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. I'm Dave Anthony. It's the last item on this Congress's to-do list, a massive bill to fund the government that some Republicans support. We talked to one who doesn't, Senator Roger Marshall.
I'm just not satisfied with the process in no way, shape, or form. I'm willing to shut the government down. I'm willing to stay up here over Christmas to fix this problem long term.
I'm Lisa Brady. For many holiday travelers, it may not be easy to get where you're going this week, and for some, even harder when you get there.
When you get together with family, old patterns emerge, old roles in terms of what role you played in the family dynamic. There's also an element of just a feeling of overwhelmed.
And I'm Will Cain, and I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It's the last quack from the lame duck Congress.
Democrats and Republicans have reached an omnibus agreement.
The omnibus is a massive spending bill, $1.7 trillion to fund numerous departments across the government the rest of this fiscal year, ahead of a Friday deadline to avert a partial shutdown. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says,
"This package represents an aggressive investment in American families, American workers, and America's national defense."
Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell says included in that is
assistance for the Ukrainians to defeat the Russians. That's the number one priority for the United States right now.
And their goal is to pass this bill in the Senate, then House before this weekend, so they can wrap up their work and head home for Christmas, which is too much, too fast for some Republicans who want more time to read the 4,100 pages in this bill.
Just a horrible budget process up here. I've never been more frustrated.
Republican Senator Roger Marshall is from Kansas.
This may be the worst week I've had in D.C. since getting here 6 years ago.
Really? So why is it so bad? I understand every 2 years, it seems, Congress goes through this almost every year. Maybe it is every year. Some sort of an issue with funding coming up to Christmas or some sort of legislation coming up to Christmas. So why is this different?
Right, Dave. I think it's just the size of it, just the enormity of this budget, that we're going to borrow $1 trillion from my grandchildren, our grandchildren collectively this year and next year. It's just all these issues coming to bear right now, and just feeling like that as one of 100 senators, I really have zero votes right now, that this entire budget is basically done by four people and maybe a couple of appropriators. This is what the Democrats want. They want to delay us. They want the chaos. They want us to swallow all 12 buckets of this budget. We should be doing this through a process where we look at 12 different buckets of money and going through those with a fine-tooth comb. But instead, what I'm given is the choice between a $1.7 trillion bill or push it to the House for 3 weeks where we could even end up with the worst situation over there. So I've just never been more frustrated. I've ran businesses before, ran a hospital. I understand how the budget process should work. This does not connect at all with people back home that are running a family budget or running a business.
Why is it worse? I know that Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans in the House who are going to be in the majority in the next Congress, why is it worse to give them a chance to work the budget out and have more say, more maybe Republican leverage with the budget?
Right. So I think that this is, you know, a debate. And I'm not saying that I absolutely know what will happen politically. But if we give Kevin McCarthy just 3 weeks to do something, that he will lose a lot of Republican votes over there on the budget. He's not going to get all 222 Republicans to agree any type of budget like this with these big of numbers.
Okay.
So then he has to walk across the aisle and ask for some Democrat votes. So then they're going to want a pound of flesh from Kevin McCarthy. Now, if we can give him 3 months of time, and that's really what I'm asking. Let's give Kevin McCarthy 3 months of time to go through these buckets one by one, present a budget. But then on the Senate side, the Senate has to be willing to filibuster something else that Joe Biden really wants. I know this is pretty deep chess we're talking about.
Isn't this the same kind of, I mean, doing the job that you do, right? Everything always seems to be tangled up in knots. And this is what I think people get frustrated by, because you can't seem to get any one thing done without having seven backroom deals to get it done.
So Dave, I see how to fix this now. I've been here for 6 years. I came here to fix this budget issue. I see how to solve it now, but I'm not given an opportunity. I'm not given a voice. That the way the process works up here, again, I go back to the Speaker of the House, the minority leaders on each side, the leader of the Senate, basically cut a deal, get a top line number. And here we are, $1 trillion in debt this year, adding to a $31 trillion national debt, which I think is the number one national security issue facing the problem. And I think it's the number one issue that's going to impact schools in the future, roads and bridges. And by the way, this government spending is the number one fuel on the fire of why we have such high inflation. And we're just throwing more gasoline on it when we borrow another $1 trillion and print more money.
Well, your leader, Mitch McConnell, said he's happy there's an increase in the defense budget. And he said a cut in spending on non-defense. So why would he be happy and you not be happy? You're both Republicans.
Well, I'm going to state this. I congratulate Leader McConnell on holding off $28 billion of social programs. He's held their feet to the fire on that already, but they're still spending more this year than last year. And I have to even call into question, should we be increasing defense funding from $770 billion to $850 billion this year? We borrowed $60 billion from our grandchildren last year for Ukraine. We're going to borrow another $47 billion. I'm just not satisfied with the process in no way, shape, or form. I'm willing to shut the government down. I'm willing to stay up here over Christmas to fix this problem long term.
But that's not going to happen, is it? You don't have enough votes for that, do you?
No, I don't think we do, but I'm not giving up. You know, once they pass this budget, then everyone's going to forget about this problem, and we won't see it again until, you know, September 30th, when this funding would end as well.
Now, you heard Senator Marshall talk about working with Democrats. Well, he is working with two on two different issues. First, one that's tied to the ongoing drama at the border, where not only is there a record surge of migrants entering the U.S. illegally, a lot of drugs are being smuggled in, too, including fentanyl. And Senator Marshall's co-sponsoring a bill with Democratic Senator Gene Shaheen to compel social media companies to report illicit fentanyl activity and drug deals.
Very similar to legislation that our president, then Senator Joe Biden, did in 2008 to address child sex trafficking issues as well. 90% of the fentanyl coming in this country comes from the southern border. It's the precursors made in China. They bring the drugs in here and they poison mainly our youth. That every day over 200 Americans are dying from fentanyl poisoning. We want to shut off purchasing this through social media.
You call it the Cooper Davis Act. Who was Cooper Davis?
Oh, wow. So Cooper, I never met Cooper, but I've talked to his mom many times. But Cooper Davis was a young man, would have been a junior in high school, a small high school in Kansas. He and his friends ordered two Percocet tablets online. He took a half a tablet and died. Cooper was not a bad kid. He wasn't a drug addict, very innocent, and he was poisoned. They had no idea that fentanyl was in there. And again, this fentanyl has taken away the lives of so many of our youth. It's the number one killer of young adults in America right now.
And social media, you believe, should be compelled to work with you.
Let's face it, we need to secure the border. And I know we're going to talk about crypto in a second. 90% of the drugs that are purchased in the dark web are done with crypto as well. So to me, social media has a part in this, and they want to cooperate. So let's give them the power to do that.
All right. Well, you gave the perfect segue. The cryptocurrency situation. I know that there's been a lot of attention on what happened with FTX. The exchange collapsed. Sam Bankman-Fried, the ex-CEO, facing fraud charges and all. That's a separate story. But with crypto, there's a push. You're working with a Democrat again, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and you are trying to deal with regulation on crypto, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, crypto is a national security threat. When we visit with our national security folks across the world, within 3 minutes, they're going to talk about how criminals, how rogue nations, how terrorists use crypto. And to fund their illicit activities, they use it to evade sanctions, to fund terrorism. They use it to fund human trafficking, drug trafficking as well. So what our legislation would do is try to remove those rogue actors out of the cryptocurrency world, but yet let law-abiding Americans to continue to do it, to invest in it. I want to go back to the biggest issue, and that's the know your customer part of this. So after 9-1-1, we added know your customer regulations to banks, and we would do the same thing with crypto.
I still think most people don't really understand cryptocurrency. I don't know if I fully understand cryptocurrency. I mean, you can't walk in anywhere with a Bitcoin in your hand and hand it to somebody like we can with a dollar. It's really hard to grasp, I think. And so how do you regulate something that's so different from regular money?
Well, look, I view crypto as like this virtual financial network. It's decentralized. They have a virtual coin that's moved around by blockchain technology. And it's not, you know, at this point in time, I think we do struggle to see its benefits, but we certainly understand its risk.
Right. You mentioned the blockchain. I mean, that's a way you're supposed to be able to track everybody who's ever owned one of these pieces of currency. Am I right?
You know, absolutely. And that's why I'm so confused is why do these criminals then prefer to use it? And the problem is they could track it, but they don't know who it is. You know, it's so instead of a name associated with that transaction, it's financial institution XYZ. So that's why they need to know their customer and to be able to track it better. All I can say is, again, 90% of the money on the dark web is to do drug transaction is using cryptocurrency. It's the second leading currency that's used in sex trafficking. And last year alone, $14 billion in digital assets was used in cyber attacks that we know of. So it's on the rise. It's a problem. It's a national security threat. And even if you sit down with the crypto people themselves, I think they would tell you over half of the cryptocurrencies out there are bad actors. So my gosh, if half of the financial institutions that use crypto are bad actors, someone's got to step in and say enough. Enough is enough.
Senator Roger Marshall, Republican from Kansas. You got a lot of things going on. Good luck. Good luck with the budget and good luck getting out of D.C. in the bad weather as we get to the weekend.
You bet, Dave. It's great to talk to you. Merry Christmas to you, your family, and to all your listeners. Thank you so much.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Will Cain with your Fox News commentary coming up.
The holidays just wouldn't be the same without visiting loved ones.
I love it. I look forward to this holiday season and traveling to Florida.
Travel's being disrupted, though, by a winter storm marching across the country, bringing snow, strong winds, and Arctic temperatures, along with pleas to consider rebooking flights or adjusting road trips.
If you can change your travel plans around the weather, please do.
Meredith Mitz with AAA of Minnesota and Iowa urging people not to risk getting stuck. Some air travelers ahead of the storm facing more familiar delays.
We were waiting in line for security check-in. That took about an hour and a half.
We were prepared for the holiday rush. You know, we showed up early. We were getting our things together, going through the lines.
But travel challenges can pale in comparison to what's waiting for some at their destination, a minefield of emotions and personalities.
So for many people, holiday time can be stressful. And although it's unique to each person, there's definitely common themes.
Dr. Karen Ruskin is a licensed marriage and family therapist who's been providing counseling for 30 years.
And a few of the common themes include grief and loss over what wasn't, what isn't, and what's not going to be. Some people are going through a lot of pain. And so when you get together with family, there's often a lot of questions. And to have to confront that is very hard. Also, family history. When you get together with family, old patterns emerge, old roles in terms of what role you played in the family dynamic. There's also an element of just a feeling of overwhelmed because there's a lack of privacy. And I'm not just talking about physical privacy. Some people think that privacy is about the physicality of space, which is a piece of it. The other, though, is about not feeling that there's intellectual or emotional privacy. So there's a lack of boundaries because often families feel like, oh, I can touch you how I want to, say hello with a hug, even if maybe you're not a touch person. I can ask you what I want because you're family. I can tell you what I think because you're family. And the fact is that could be a real invasion of boundaries, physically and or emotionally and or intellectually. So those are some of it. I can go into more, but that's a quickie answer to that question.
Well, it's kind of like a minefield. And I mean, no wonder it's so stressful. How do you go about setting some boundaries if you need to without offending anybody?
So having strategies going into a family get together is a great game plan. And setting healthy boundaries is not about being where now you have your armor up and your sword out. Instead, it's rather going in as a curious listener, being able to ask a question to their question. If somebody asks you a question, you don't have to answer it. And you can ask a question with curiosity and say, that's a very interesting question to ask after we haven't seen each other for a little while. Why did you ask that question? So curious questioner is one way of creating a boundary where you don't answer something, and yet it's still a pleasant connective opportunity. Another method, another technique, if you will, is the direct firm response. You can literally say, I decline to answer that. And you just look at them and then you smile. And that's it. It's firm, it's direct, and the smile is pleasant afterwards rather than it being an argumentative scenario.
Definitely political talk can be a stressor. Should you avoid the topic of politics entirely, if possible, or does it depend on the people involved?
As far as the topic of politics, or any other topic, mind you, you get to make that decision for you. For some people, they actually enjoy a healthy debate. For others, although they enjoy a healthy debate, they know their family dynamic, it's not going to be healthy at all. It's going to be unhealthy. It's going to be toxic. So if you know that's what your audience is and that's what the family dynamic is, it's not about avoidance. It's about choice. It's about choosing to acknowledge this is not a topic that is going to be an enjoyable family get-together experience. So therefore, why put yourself in the position to even experience that? So it's about choice, choosing not to discuss politics.
What if going home to see family never ends well? You'd rather avoid it altogether. Is it better not to participate in family time this year? And if so, how do you break that news?
Right. So thinking about when it comes to family and trying to decide whether to go or not to go, because you know the pattern, the historical pattern has been, it doesn't end well. First, think about what's in my control versus what is out of my control. Because we can't control what other people say or do. We can only control our response, right? So ultimately, if you truly are confident that it's going to end unwell for you to be with family, and you would be more at peace being by yourself this year or being with chosen family, with friends. And if that's the choice you make, you get to for yourself, and saying to family, I want you to know that although I'm choosing this year not to get together with family, I really appreciate the invite so very much. I'd love to take a rain check. Please consider me for next year. I really don't want to get into the reason why I hope you don't get offended. This is not about you, but this year I'm not going to be there. Thank you so much for your understanding. So you see what we did there? You let them know with certainty what your game plan is, and you already inform them that you're not going to be discussing the rationale. That is how you handle it.
Mm-hmm. Holiday stress can also leak into relationships with a significant other. What's your advice for couples who maybe have a rocky relationship with one or both families?
Right. So when it comes to the couple relationship dynamic, it's always important to call it out for what it is. Don't sweep under the rug where there's a big hump sticking under that rug for the two of you to trip over. Confront it. Being able to say to your mate, this is tough for both of us. Identify with what's tough for them and identify with what's tough for you. You want to ask them about what their particular challenge is and what's hard for them while not being judgmental or defensive, because sometimes we can become defensive about our own family while judging the others. It's very important to not do that and rather to be empathetic to yourself and to your mate and to discuss what the challenges are. Come up with a game plan together. Be a team, you know, go couple team. Joke about it, right? Here we go. Let's go. We got this. So being able to come together and say, all right, what should our game plan be when we're getting together with our families? What are we going to do if somebody's family member says something that's upsetting? Who's going to handle it? Am I handling my family and you're handling yours? Come up with the game plan. So that way you both feel like you can trust and rely on one another. These are amongst several tools that couples can utilize.
You've been doing this for 30 years now. Do families and maybe, you know, relationships in general seem more divided to you overall, either by, you know, politics or other issues than when you started?
There is definitely a shift. Years ago, acceptance was a major theme in my early work as a therapist, whether I was seeing the couple or whether I was seeing an individual. Acceptance, that was the theme, all ages, all backgrounds. We accept, this is the way it is. What are you gonna do? That's kind of the theme, okay? The shift that has happened is I can no longer accept what is unacceptable to me. That is the shift that I have seen, where people do not want to accept one is unacceptable. But what happens is, because you feel obligation to family, you experience this stressful angst because you know you don't want to accept, yet you feel like you have to because they're family. So you experience an increase of anxiety and not knowing, is it okay to share what it is that I'm feeling? What do I do? How do I handle it? The lack of tools and coping strategies is something that I have seen is a real challenge for people. And therefore, I have made a shift in order to accommodate clientele to utilize a coaching direct, compassionate, yes, also direct and solution-driven model, because people want solutions and strategies. It's not just about talk about feelings. They want strategies and action that they can take. So I have definitely seen a shift in my 30 years for sure.
So let's say someone takes the plunge. They're with family. Everyone's gathered together. If a situation does start to get heated, it was unavoidable in the end. How can you help to cool it back down?
Well, the question becomes, do I want to be the person to cool down this heat, or do I want to be the person to step away from the heat? Stepping away can create a cool down in and of itself. Sometimes, though, a person then feels like they're bowing down and that the other person might think that they're being cowardly. But stepping away sometimes is the cool down, because in reality, sometimes we're the ones who needs the cool down, so that way we don't escalate an interaction further. Another method of cool down is being able to say the words, and this is an old one, an oldie but a goodie, saying, I'm going to choose to agree to disagree. So you don't say to them, let's agree to disagree, because people get frustrated. You don't tell them what to do. You say, I'm going to choose to agree to disagree. Thank you for sharing your opinion. And that's when you smile and then you say, I'm going to take a step away and I'm going to get some of the hors d'oeuvres over there. So you choose now to do a combination platter approach, if you will, which is to disengage with your kind smile, no longer with the anger and the venom that's coming out if you're part of that dynamic, and letting them know that you choose to agree to disagree. So that way they know you've heard them, you're stepping away, and then you literally step away. You let them know that you are. So it's not that you're walking away from them, you're letting them know I'm choosing to. So there's an element of respect of the dynamic, even if you feel they're being disrespectful. These are a few options of ways in which of handling heat, so to speak.
Hopefully folks can take some of your excellent insight and focus on enjoying the moment, focus on enjoying the positive and getting other people to sort of bring out their positives to the table as well. Dr. Karen Ruskin, licensed marriage and family therapist, thank you so much and happy holidays.
It is my sincere pleasure. Happy holidays to you and to your audience.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. Some holiday gifts are more appreciated than others. A new consumer survey from Context Logic Incorporated, the parent company that operates e-commerce platform Wish, has found some gift givers and recipients have some strong feelings about holiday presents. They polled thousands of adults in the U.S., the U.K., Spain, and Germany. More than a quarter of respondents, 28%, said defective discount items were the worst holiday gift. Fruitcake was a close second, with 23% of respondents dubbing the festive dessert as a poor gift. 1 in 10 respondents say they weren't a fan of cheap chocolates either. Gifts related to weight were also sore subjects, with respondents not liking weight loss items like scales and gym memberships. Other gifts that were deemed the worst include out-of-style clothing, Christmas-themed ties, knockoff luxury goods, and political items. More than one-third of the survey's respondents say they found last-minute purchasing tends to result in some bad gifts. Also interesting, most Americans believe they've mastered the art of fake smiling, according to Wish. Almost 80% of the survey's American respondents say they think they're good at faking enthusiasm when they don't like their gift. While many Americans feign appreciation when they received a so-called bad gift, about 20% reportedly choose to re-gift the item they receive instead of returning it. And while those people have a lot of opinions about bad gifts, 75% of consumers believe they haven't given someone an unsatisfactory gift. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Will Kane. What's on your mind?
The biggest story with the least attention. 2 weeks ago, scientists in California pointed 192 laser beams at a pinhead-sized target of two elements, and a fusion reaction succeeded in releasing more energy than the amount delivered by the lasers. In short, nuclear fusion. This breakthrough, this innovation, this story has the ability to obviously create cheap energy for the entire world, making each and every one of us more wealthy. But at the same time, it undercuts the climate change control narrative, and as a result, undercuts the political platform of totalitarians who want to control our choices from what we drive to what we eat. So what does that mean? They'll fight it every step of the way. I'll break down the history and the depth of this story on the Will Kane podcast, which you can check out right here at Fox News Podcasts.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.